Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
I've got a hole in me pocket.
I like that one.
Yay. So, oh, you might hear some giggles in the background. Just ignore that. That's our podcasting sprite who is joining us today.
Yes, yes.
Because it's a magical time of year. We're recording this just before the new year.
Yes, that's true. Actually, it's right after the holidays, and the aforementioned sprite actually has a bearing on what we're talking about, because the sprite in question would be my daughter, and she just received her very first iPod.
Yeah, we wanted to talk today about the iPod. This actually comes to us courtesy of a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Nick, and Nick says, "Hey guys, I love your podcast, and I've been a loyal listener for a long time now. I really think that you guys choose good topics, and I really like that you always release episodes on time." Well, thanks, Nick. We like that too. "I was wondering if you could do a podcast on the history of the Apple iPod line, or for another idea, you could do a podcast on how Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, Game Center work, and how they compare. These are just a few ideas, and I would love for you to do one. Either way, keep up the good work. Sent from my iPod."
Ha-ha.
So we decided we were going to tackle the iPod today and kind of talk about its history and its place in technology. Of course, there's no denying the iPod has taken a prominent place in technology today.
That's true, but it wasn't the very first MP3 player
Not
on the market.
Not at all. In fact, it was relatively late to the game.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Although a lot of people think the very first MP3 player was from a company called Diamond.
Oh, yes, the Diamond Multimedia Rio PMP300.
Yes, that was not the first.
Shut your mouth.
Okay, but it's going to be a really boring podcast. No, it was the MP3 man. from Seihan, which was actually launched in Asia in the late spring 1998. I found that out from Elliot Van Buskirk at CNET.
Yes, who then moved on to write for Wired.
Indeed. It was actually released in the United States by Iger Labs, the MP Man F10 and F20. Again, 1998, and just a scant few months before Diamond released the Rio here in the United States.
There was also, before that, in 1997, there was a device called the Listen Up Digital Audio Player, but you can argue whether or not that truly fits the MP3 player model. It was definitely a digital audio player, but I would say that the MP Man and the Diamond Multimedia Rio, those are probably more traditional MP3 players the way we think of them. And so you guys know, did you happen to see how many, I had to look this up in another source, did you happen to see how many megabytes of music it held?
Yeah, it's funny, you should say that, megabytes.
Yeah, not gigabytes.
No, we're not talking about gigabytes.
32 megabytes, because these were flash memory based. And at the time when they were released, flash memory was still a very young technology compared to hard drives. But no one had really invested in making a hard drive version of an MP3 player.
Yeah, that's true. And as a matter of fact, it was also an expensive technology.
Yes.
Compared to what it is now, you can go into convenience stores and pick up a gigabyte thumb drive for, you know, $4 or $5 now.
Yeah.
I may be exaggerating, but not by much.
Well, let me put it this way. When you go to something like the Consumer Electronics Show, a lot of them will put their press kits on digital formats on a thumb drive, and the average size of those thumb drives, I would say, is 2 gigabytes.
Yes.
So these are companies that are creating hundreds of these to give away to vendors and the press. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly not as expensive as the old ones.
That's true. But so the MP3 player, as it was before the launch of the iPod, was a very small device as far as storage goes.
Yeah, there was...
although it was, you know, in general solid state.
Yes.
So that seemed very very high tech. They also sort of resembled the cassette players of the time.
Yes, they were a little clunky. They had a lot of buttons. I will say that in my research, I did uncover one hard drive MP3 player that predated the iPod.
Oh.
It was the Hango/Remote Solutions Portable Jukebox PJB-100, which was released in 1998, actually. And it could hold up to 6 gigabytes of music, but that was mainly limited to Asia. There wasn't an attempt to break into the Western market.
Yes, that's actually funny that you would say that, because that sounds sort of foreign, but it kind of wasn't, because Van Buskirk points out that was actually developed by Compaq.
Yeah.
But licensed to Hango, which was a Korean company. You know, at that point, you know, as a matter of fact, when Hewlett-Packard acquired Compaq, they licensed the iPod.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
They had the tech.
It's funny that they could have gotten a jump on the market in the United States, but of course, there was no way of knowing at that time.
No, not at all.
So why would Apple, a company that at that point was known mainly for creating computers, that did try to do some personal electronics that, to one extent or another, did not work out so well.
No.
Newton, I'm looking at you.
I'm sorry. Did you say Pippin?
So why? What would lead them to invest in creating a digital music player?
Actually, it's funny too, because it wasn't really Apple's idea. According to some of the information that I've read, the idea came from outside the company.
Yes,
from a guy named Tony.
Yeah, Tony Fadell, or Fadel. I'm going with Fadell.
I would say that.
F-A-D-E-L-L.
Yep. He had worked with Philips in the past and with General Magic, but basically was pitching the idea of, I don't know, an MP3 environment, a music player, and something where you could get your music from your computer to the MP3 player.
Yeah, he was looking at an entire ecosystem. Everything
yes.
from the software that would live on your computer, that would organize your music and let you put it into different formats or different playlists, that kind of thing. and as also a device that you would store that music on and you could play it back later. So he was definitely looking at the big picture, and mm-hmm. he thought that no one had nailed this. People had created some devices that you could put music on, but no one had really taken the model so that it had everything encapsulated in one big package. And so he actually shopped this idea around to several companies.
Yes, including a couple that probably were kicking themselves years later. Real Networks yep. was one. Real being famous for providing computer software that would allow you to play streaming content, audio and video files on your computer. They were looking at the Rhapsody music service, which still exists in a form or two. But also Philips, his former employer.
Yep.
Known for consumer gadgets of all different kinds. You'd have thought that one or both of them would have been interested in the idea of coming out with something like this, but they weren't, and he turned to Apple instead.
Yep, and strangely enough, Apple at that time said, "This sounds interesting. We are going to invest in it." And essentially, Fidel got hired to work on this project. He was assigned a team of about 30 people from Apple. He also had a company called Portal Player mm-hmm. that was helping. And there were about 200 or more people at Portal Player who were also working on this project. And then as the project went on, as they began to develop what would eventually become the iPod, a certain Mr. Steve Jobs got very involved mm-hmm. in the process to the point where I saw it described as being 100% involved, that it became almost a daily activity for Jobs to check in on the project to give notes, which essentially said, "It's not loud enough. Make it louder." which I saw was attributed, according to one writer, to Jobs having hearing problems, which is why the iPod is louder than some of its some other MP3 players. Why the settings go, this one goes to 11.
Yeah,
it's one louder. But there was another fellow who was very likely heavily involved in the design of the iPod, the physical design.
Oh yes,
Jonathan Ive,
mm-hmm.
who is he's a senior vice president of design over at Apple, and has had a hand in designing all sorts of Apple products. You know, when we sit there and talk about how Apple products are really sleek and beautiful, and mm-hmm. they have great lines, and you know, even the whole no buttons thing, we can thank Jonathan Ive for a lot of that.
Yeah,
Steve Jobs as well. So Jobs and Ive together, they really shape the way things look coming from Apple.
Yes, indeed.
So this this project that mm-hmm. goes on, it actually comes to fruition, and in late 2001, October 23rd, 2001, the first generation iPod debuts.
Yes, yeah. On the 23rd, they had the first generation iPod. Now, when they announced this, Apple had rented a presentation space
yeah.
in California. Mm-hmm. And basically all they had told the media was, hey, we've got a big announcement coming and it's not going to be about the Mac.
Yeah, it was really, really secretive. In fact, they were so secretive about this that even within Apple, people were not allowed to look at this.
That's right.
It was only the design team that had any access to what it looked like. And if anyone was going to test it, anyone from outside that team, they would have to go into a room where the iPod would be kept in a box that had only a couple of little windows and access points for you to kind of poke your fingers in and push the different buttons and to play with it without getting a full look at the device. So no one from outside that team would be able to describe what it looked like.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It's a great, great design method.
So, yes, the first generation iPod, there were two versions.
Yeah, the first one only could hold 5 gigabytes worth of music. I say only, but really when you think about it, competing MP3 players at the time were between 32 to 64 megabytes. So 5 gigabytes was quite a lot.
Yeah, and that was one of the big selling points. Of course, it didn't achieve this with flash memory. It used a physical hard drive.
Yeah, it had a mini hard drive inside it.
A very small hard mm-hmm. drive.
And then the later one that was added was because the very first one was 5 gigabytes. It was shortly followed by a 10 gigabyte model, mm-hmm. but otherwise had the same specs. This iPod was a little different from all future iPods. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the interface that was so that's unlike all the other iPods?
Yes, this particular iPod had a mechanical wheel that you would use to scroll through the songs. Now, that actually the interface was one of the things that set the iPod apart from its competition, because if you'll remember when I mentioned it a few minutes ago, everybody else was still stuck in the old-fashioned using buttons for play, fast forward, and rewind.
Yeah, it was making it was hard to navigate long playlists.
Yes.
It was really tedious to use that kind of feature.
And especially when you're talking about a player that could hold, you know, thousands of songs.
Right.
In comparison with the older ones, you were going to be spending a lot of time
just skipping songs.
Yeah, skipping songs.
Yeah.
So they wanted something that they could use, and they came up with the scroll wheel, but this was a mechanical scroll wheel instead of later editions where you used, you know, we'll get into that in a moment,
but
a touch scroll wheel. And it did have a ring of buttons.
Yep.
You know, for the menu and for forward and back that surrounded the outside of it. And, of course, a black and white screen.
Yep.
Use the old Chicago font for those of us who are longtime
veterans. I was wondering if you were going to go with the fonts, too.
Well, I actually
had that written down as trivia at the end. But you scooped me, Paulette. You scooped me.
You know, it happens.
Yeah.
And it used a FireWire as far as the interface goes, so you could hook it up to your Macintosh computer.
In fact, that's all you could hook it up to. It was not Windows compatible.
That is correct.
The very first iPod was only compatible with Mac computers. It used the FireWire cable to sync and to charge. It had an ARM processor, mm-hmm. and the operating system was designed by a company called Pixo.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know how much it originally cost?
I believe it was it $400?
It was $400. 400 smackers for this thing. And so the very first iPod, you can't really call it a runaway success, although it did definitely make a huge impression on everyone at the event because no one knew what was coming. And no one really thought of Apple as a music company.
Right.
You know, today it's hard to think of Apple as a computer company. Sometimes you think of it as a music company.
Well, of course, it's changed its name since then, too, since its success in portable electronics. Now, Apple is not Apple Computer. It is Apple Inc.
Right.
Also, of course, there was something else that we have mentioned a few times in the past, that being Apple's feud with AppleCorp, the Beatles company, over its music capabilities. Of course, they were butted heads for a while,
sure,
about whether or not they were allowed to play music on a Macintosh computer or any of the other other Apple computers up until that point. That is where it is famously said the "so sue me" sound came from,
right?
Error sound. But yeah, so that was one of those things. I mean, Apple, a music company? No.
Yeah, and the iTunes version they had at the time, which was iTunes 2.1,
mm-hmm.
it was really a music management system. It wasn't designed to you couldn't purchase music. There was no music store at that time.
No.
So you used it to manage your music, but you didn't use it to acquire music.
Yeah, that was one of the things that Fidel didn't know when he came to Apple, was that Apple had already purchased a company that made a software called SoundJam. And those of us who are fans, longtime fans of another, at that point, competing company, Panic, they make really awesome Mac software. They made a program called Audion, which was in a feud. They were the two big MP3 players for the Macintosh at that time. There were others, but those were the two big ones. And a lot of people were kind of upset that SoundJam ended up getting purchased by Apple, but that the acquisition was actually kept quiet, and SoundJam became became iTunes in its later incarnations. But it was originally a very simple management program and music player for the Macintosh.
Right, and then let's skip ahead a little bit. On July 17th, 2002. We got the second generation of the iPod. Now, this one came in 10 and 20 gigabyte versions.
20 gigabytes?
Yes. And it worked with Windows to some extent. There was a new scroll wheel. It was the tactile scroll wheel that we're familiar with now. It's not no longer mechanical. Now it's like the touch screen type. Well, not touch screen, but the tactile, like the touch pads you would find on laptops.
It's a capacitive capacitive touch surface.
Right.
Yeah, then that was what you were familiar with. Now, the look seemed pretty similar. It still has the ring of buttons around there, and it still has the black and white screen with Chicago.
Still uses FireWire, although mm-hmm. you can get an adapter to work with PCs. And it also, on PCs, it did not use iTunes, because there was still no iTunes for PC yet. Mm-hmm. It used Music Match Jukebox instead.
I remember them.
So that was so you could still now they've opened up to a much larger market. It's still pretty expensive, mm-hmm. And the price will go down in the next generation. But we'll talk about why that is in a second. So this was a pretty big leap for Apple. They're now taking aim at a market beyond just the Apple diehard enthusiasts. You know,
mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the third generation, which comes out in April of 2003.
Yes, April 28th, in fact. And this one came out in a series of sizes.
Yeah.
They released 10, 15, 20, 30, and 40 gigabyte versions of this third generation iPod. The scroll wheel no longer had the buttons surrounding it.
Yeah,
In fact, it had a series of buttons above the scroll wheel.
Right.
But it was still black and white.
Right. It fully supported Windows.
Mm-hmm.
It used iTunes 4.1, or early on you could still use Music Match Jukebox, but quickly it became iTunes specific, and that was the only management software you could use legally use, I guess you could say, or sanctionally used
yes.
on your iPod.
Sanctionally?
Yeah, it's not a real word, but
okay.
That's okay. So it also, they changed up the battery.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be a lithium polymer battery in the first two generations, but they switched to lithium ion, which sadly meant that the playtime actually decreased from the second generation to the third generation. It went from 10 hours to 8 hours playtime.
That's right.
But it fully supported Windows, so you didn't have to worry about this kind of namby-pamby support. And also, it had a USB syncing capability.
Yes.
Which, you know, that was the next big step, was that it still supported FireWire,
mm-hmm.
but you could also use the USB to sync it. Now,
also, if you just throw it in water, it'll sync by itself.
Right, don't do that. They don't support it. If you get your iPod wet, you will not get it fixed.
Do not throw your iPod in water.
So right around this time, in 2003, there was something else that was starting. It was a kind of a revolution in getting information out into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
It was this thing that was called, eventually it was called podcasting. So, yeah, it's what we're doing right now. But right around 2003 was when Christopher Lydon began to podcast,
mm-hmm.
although at the time it wasn't called that. It was kind of called audio blogging, or
yeah.
you know, they had a lot of different words for it.
Somebody talking into a mic, and then you download it and stick it on your MP3 playering.
Yeah, the earliest mention of the word podcasting that I could find came from an article in The Guardian called Audible Revolution, written by Ben Hammersley. And it was just what do we call this? Podcasting?
I'd always heard it attributed to Adam Curry.
It would not surprise me.
But that doesn't mean that it is, you know. That's true. That's always what I'd heard.
It could very well be true. So at any rate, that also helps propel the iPod and MP3 players in general to even greater prominence, because mm-hmm. now people are starting to use it for things beyond just managing music. So in 2004, we get a new product in the iPod line.
Yes.
The iPod Mini.
Yes, that's true. And in keeping with the still popular iMac series of computers at that point, which were coming in a different line of color, a whole range of colors.
Right.
They did that with the iPod Mini as well.
Right, because the early iPods were only arriving in white. That was the
yes.
only color that they came in.
Yes.
So the iPod Mini gave a little bit of a splash of color. They were, of course, smaller than the other iPods.
Mm-hmm.
That was also in their storage capacity. They could only hold up to 4 gigabytes of music. That's still, granted, more than any of the flash-based players that mm-hmm. were around at that time. Although by this time, there were other players on the market that also used mini hard drives. You know, like Creative had come out with a few, and there were others as well.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that at this point, the iPod was competitive but not dominant in the market. I mean, the machines were held far more music, but they were so expensive. I mean, that's, you know, at this point in 2004 when the iPod Mini was released, I started thinking about the possibility that maybe at some point I would actually go out and buy one of these things, but they were so darned expensive. I actually had a Sonic Blue, they were the company that had acquired the Rio. I had a Rio Volt. Mm-hmm. Do you remember those?
I remember seeing them.
Yes, they they were CD players. So you could play regular CDs on them, but they were MP3 players too. They could record a disc with MP3s on them if you encoded it in a Windows format. If you, I don't think it would read Mac discs, if I remember correctly. I no longer have it, but you could, you know, store. It was sort of iPod-like for me because you could store, you know, however many CD songs you could fit on a single CD. You know, 700 megabytes worth of music. That was far more than you know, the little pocket flash players.
Sure, yeah.
But it wasn't as much as like a you know, 40 gigabyte.
You still needed a disc to be able to play stuff. I mean, but sure. But yeah, storing stuff as a digital file as opposed to the audio format, you could fit a lot more onto a CD.
And you could carry fewer CDs than you would if you had, say, a Discman.
Yeah.
One of Sony's Discmen. Discmen? Discmen. So,
Discmans.
You know, it was sort of in between. You know, I still was thinking someday I would actually have one of these things.
Well, and the price for the iPod was starting to go down a little bit just because they had, at this time, launched the iTunes Music Store, which mm-hmm. helped them generate revenue beyond just selling the devices. Mm-hmm. So by selling music, they were making money.
Well, as it turns out, the next one, the iPod fourth generation, black and white, which released on the 19th of July, 2004, was my very first, and I still have it, iPod. I got the 20-gig version. There is a 40-gig version that also came out. Had a longer battery life.
Yep,
12 hours. Amped it up to 12 hours. Amped it up. And it was really neat, except, and I got it Christmas that year, so it was December of 2004, and I was really happy for about 8 to 10 months.
Yeah, this seems to be a running theme with you and Apple products.
Well, actually, I think it's probably pretty safe to say with most tech products.
But you tend to adopt them just before they announce the next model.
And the next model was a doozy.
So you just talked about version 4, right?
Yes, the fourth generation iPod.
So the fifth generation iPod. That's what we're looking at now, huh?
Well, I'm thinking...
Or are you looking at the stuff that they released in between?
The stuff that was released on October 26th of 2004.
Uh-huh.
At least that's the date I have. But I remember it being announced a little later than that because that was what some people call the fifth generation was the first color iPod. And it was essentially, it was called the iPod Photo.
Right.
Which was the first color screen. And really, other than that, other than the size and the color screen, wasn't a whole lot different.
Yeah, it couldn't play back video yet. It could do photos, but not video.
I was so annoyed that it was a color iPod, and I had just gotten one.
And right around this time, actually, was Real Network enters the story just briefly again. They created a software called Harmony.
Yes.
Which reverse engineered the Fair Play copy protection that Apple was using so that it would allow they could allow Reel's Rhapsody music service to work with iPods, and then Apple released a patch that prevented iPods from interfacing with Rhapsody.
Yes.
And thus began the stories about Apple and how closed off it was. But this was the idea from the very beginning. The idea was to create that music ecosystem. And part of that means that you control everything.
Yes.
You don't let other folks jump in there.
Yes, the iTunes Store now is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, music retailer in the world. They sell millions and millions and millions of songs, and now video and apps and all sorts of other things. And part of their ability to do that hinged on, you know, having a device for you to use to play those songs.
Yeah. Now, 2005 was a huge year for Apple and the iPod line. The iPod mm-hmm. Shuffle first generation came out. That one is the device that doesn't have a screen. It uses flash memory, and you just it just shuffles your playlist, so you know it plays it randomly. It came in a 512 megabyte version and a 1 gigabyte version because it was using the flash memory. It lasted about 12 hours of battery life.
Yep. This is the very first flash memory iPod, which the pundits had been predicting pretty early on for the iPod line, but this is the first time they actually got around to releasing one, which was 4 years after the first iPod's debut.
And then a little bit later, you get the iPod Mini second generation.
Yes.
And then you also got the iPod Color, which came out in June of 2005. Then you also get the iPod Nano first generation. So the Nano was what replaced the Mini line. It's actually kind of funny because the Mini second generation came out February 22nd, 2005. The iPod Nano first generation came out September 7th, 2005. So within the same year, they introduced and then replaced a line of iPods.
That's pretty, it's becoming very, very common for devices such as these.
Yeah, so the Nano had a color screen, but the Nanos themselves were only available in black or white at first, which was kind of, that kind of bummed out people who were used to the colorful Minis. Then on October 12th, 2005, you got the fifth generation iPod, which that a lot of people talk about that being like the real game changer for Apple as far as design goes.
Yeah.
It came in 30 and 60 gigabyte versions. It lasted up to 20 hours on audio, but it also could play back video.
Yep.
At this point, they dropped the sync support for FireWire. It only charges now. You can still use a FireWire to charge your iPod, but it won't sync with your computer. You have to use a USB to sync it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit later on, they got kind of a mini update where the 60 gigabyte version was dropped and an 80 gigabyte version was introduced. But people sometimes call that generation 5.5.
Yeah.
So that was 2005. In 2006, you see the second generation of the iPod Nano come out, and they actually have some different options for colors now, not just black and white.
Yeah, the colors are back.
Still no video on that, but it comes in 2, 4, or 8 gigabyte versions. Then you had the second generation of the iPod Shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
This was the one that looked like kind of like a postage stamp. It had a clip on the back, and it let you clip to your clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And still no screen or anything like that.
No, that's true, but I believe that was the only one to actually have a clip built in.
And until later.
Yes.
Yes. But yeah, that one had a clip built in. It was the first one and the only one at that time. And then let's see. Now I've lost my, oh, here we go. The iPod sixth generation. Now this is, or did I skip 2006 or did I just talk about that?
No, we just did. That
okay,
was when
good.
The iPod Shuffle second.
This is what I get for
generation.
Not wearing my glasses when I'm looking at my notes. iPod sixth generation in 2007, September 5th. Okay. So now we're getting into the point where the previous year, they announced the Nano and the Shuffle on September 12th, 2006. This is where we're starting to get into that annual September announcement for iPod products. 2006 was really the first year where they really did concentrate on that. And
mm-hmm.
then 2007, they come out big on September 5th. They released the iPod 6th generation,
mm-hmm.
which really just gets the updates the iPod with 80 and 160 gigabyte versions. Otherwise, it pretty much stays the same.
Yeah.
The iPod Nano third generation comes out. This is the first Nano that allows video playback.
Mm-hmm.
The iPod Touch debuts. The first generation iPod Touch. Hey, what generation iPod Touch did you get?
First generation.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, first generation iPod Touch came out in 8, 16, and 32 gigabyte versions. This was the first touchscreen iPod. It was meant as sort of an alternative to the iPhone, for people who liked the iPhone form factor but didn't want to get locked down into a contract.
Yeah, that was funny because at the time, I made jokes that the iPod Touch didn't actually exist. That when you got to the Apple Store and said, "I want an iPod Touch," they'd say, "Well, you know, you can have an iPhone for just $100 more," and they would go, "Oh, okay, I'll do that." So they never had to actually show that they didn't have one. Of course, it did exist, and I do own one, and it still works very well. Although it could stand a battery replacement after 2 years,
that's
two
another
and a half
thing,
years.
That's another thing that just as a note, Apple does not let you replace your battery.
No.
Not on your own anyway.
Uh-uh.
You have to get service for that. That was one of the big complaints people had about the iPod line
sure.
all the way from the very beginning was that you could not replace the battery. battery.
Okay, it's that closed of an ecosystem.
Yeah, and we're already over 30 minutes, so we're going to zoom through the rest of these, because most of these are just updates. We'll mention the ones that have the really big changes.
Okay.
So in 2008, September 9th on 2008, they released the iPod Classic version 2, because mm-hmm. the sixth generation was technically the first iPod Classic.
Yes.
iPod Classic version 2, it only came in a 120 gigabyte version, but otherwise was the same. The iPod Nano fourth generation. This was the one that was really tall and narrow, and you could shake it to shuffle the music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The iPod Touch second generation added some stuff like the external volume control and external speaker. But other than that, there really weren't a whole lot of updates to it. And then...
Except I spent a lot of time complaining that I didn't wait for the second generation.
Right, I remember that. And then in March of 2009, they released the iPod Shuffle third generation. This was the one that looked like a solid little stick of aluminum gum.
Yes.
And there were no controls on the device other than a power switch. You had to control it using... controls on your headphones, so you had to buy Apple headphones for it.
Yep.
This would not prove popular, and they would change that on the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to the 999 event.
Yes,
September 9th, 2009. Yeah, this was a big one. iPod Classic version 3 comes out. That's the 160 gigabyte version.
Mm-hmm.
You get the Nano Generation 5, which included the FM radio and the pedometer and a longer screen.
And came in 73 different colors.
And it had a camera on the back, which allowed you to record video. But you know what didn't have a camera?
Yeah.
The iPod Touch.
Nope.
They improved the voice controls.
They did.
That was about it. iPod Shuffle 4th generation came out the next year. The Shuffle at this point... takes the square form factor. This is the one that's current,
yes.
Where it looks like a perfect square.
Yep.
It's got the control or the play button in the middle. There's still no screen. It's got the voice stuff on the, so you can listen to it on the headphones, but they put the buttons back.
Yes, they did.
They realized people wanted to use their own headphones.
Yep. And they just updated the firmware on that one. That's the one my daughter got for Christmas. And they just updated that so that you can use the play button as a lock.
Ah, and then they also, at that same event, they introduced the iPod Nano 6th generation. This is the square one that has the touchscreen interface.
Very nice.
That was very pretty, but it confused some people because now the iPod Nano doesn't have a camera anymore. It doesn't have video playback anymore, but it still has the FM radio, and you can use it for data storage.
And it looks like it has apps on it, but it doesn't.
Right. It's confusing because it does have the little touchscreen interface like the Touch and the iPhone do, but there are no apps.
And then the fourth generation iPod Touch with the Retina display.
And the camera.
And the camera.
Finally, and FaceTime capability.
Mm-hmm.
It also used the same processor as the iPhone, the A4 processor.
Yep.
So that's kind of where we are now. We've got, the iPod Classic hasn't really had an update since 2009, and probably, I doubt that they're going to update that. They'll probably still support it, but, they're really pushing people for the iPod Touch for the flagship product.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Nano and the Shuffle supporting it.
Now, over the years, many, many, many other people have entered the Flash MP3 player market. There are tons and tons of people that are doing that, but they're still, the iPod has come to dominate the MP3 player market, even in the face of stiff competition from companies like Microsoft with the Zune, which is, upgrading the Zune with every iteration and offering new features. Now, here's a twist. Samsung, I saw the other day, is rumored now, that's as of this recording, it'll probably be announced by the time it actually goes live, is coming out is expected to come out with an Android-based competitor to the iPod Touch, which I imagine will be, if it can run applications from the Android store, the Android market, that will be serious competition for the iPod Touch.
Yeah. Of course, you would have thought that the Zune HD would have had some legs on it, but Zune just never really, I mean, it has its champions, right? There are people
sure.
who love the Zune products, and it is a nice MP3 player.
I haven't quite figured out exactly why it hasn't done better than it
has. I think part of the problem is that the Zune HD really, really performs well against devices like the Nano.
Yeah.
It's when you get to the iPod Touch that you say, oh, well, this doesn't really measure up to the Touch.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not, there's not a model above the Zune HD that really goes toe-to-toe with the Touch.
Yeah.
That's what I think an objective person coming at it completely without bias would say.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, I did not want to own an iPod.
Yeah.
When I got into MP3s, I owned a Creative Zen.
Yeah.
Zen Touch. That thing was a brick, let me tell you. It was like having a brick of lead in your pocket. But it held lots and lots of music. It had a much higher hard drive capacity than anything Apple had at that time, and it wasn't as expensive.
Right.
Then when I got my Mac, I realized how awesome iPods could be, and the reason for that is that the iTunes integration with Mac and the integration with iPods, that works great.
Mm-hmm.
iTunes on the PC doesn't always work great.
Right. Yeah,
it doesn't always work great on Macs either, but
true.
But it's more seamless that way.
Right.
So we're going to wrap up, but you mentioned that the iPod up to the fourth generation anyway used the Chicago font.
Mm-hmm.
iPod minis used SB Sans.
Ah, yes.
The iPod Photo up through the fifth generation iPod used a font called Myriad.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else except for the latest iPod Touch uses Helvetica. iPod Touch 4th generation uses Helvetica Neue. N-E-U-E.
Wouldn't that be Neue?
Neue.
Oh.
So, to all of our Neue listeners out there, thank you for tuning in.
Oh, we just murdered that word.
We're going to, well, you know, it's justifiable homicide, in my opinion. You put that many vowels together, it's just destined to happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to wrap this up. We hope you enjoyed this episode about iPods. We'll probably do others on specific technologies in the future. If you have any suggestions or tips, or you just want to share your own iPod story, you can let us know on Twitter and Facebook. Our handles there are TechStuffHSW. Or you can shoot us an email. That email address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.